Shalom and welcome back to Aliyah Yomi. Today we're going to be learning together Parshas Shlach Sheni, the second Aliyah in Parshas Shlach. It is a sum total of 19 psukim running from Perek Yud Gimel Chaf Aleph to Perek Yud Aleph Pasuk Zion. The main idea in Aliyah is the Meraglim's tour of the land and their bad report. Here's a summary and then we'll take a few points to ponder. So we hear about that they listen to Moshe, they ascend to check out the land. They start out in Midbar Tzin and they go all the way to the road towards Hamas, which is in the north. That meant that they started gathering in the south, reaching to Hebron, a city which we're told predates Tzoan of Mitzrayim 7 years. Then they encountered, there in Hebron, they encountered Achiman, Sheshai, Talmai, the children of the giants, and then they came to Nachal Eshkol, which was from where they got a bunch of grapes, a fig, a pomegranate, and the grapes they carried out on staves. Then they returned from their tour after 40 days, and they came to Moshe, Aaron, and all of Israel. They started off and they said, Gam, you know, also that is a really is a good land of milk and honey, and they showed them the fruit. The Mepharshim point out that in order to be able to say a non-truth, you need to start off with a semblance of truth. That's how they started off. And then they said, Ephes, but the people are strong, Azaam, and the cities are fortified until the heavens. And they describe the giants they met there. They describe how Amalek is in the south. And they know that Israel's already had bad encounters with Amalek. It's going to trigger PTSD with them. And they talked about the Chittim, the Yevusim and Amorim who lived in the mountains, the Canaanim who lived by the sea and the river. At which point, Kalev gets up and he vayas Kalev Hazam. He tries to calm people down. He quiets them down. And the Mepharshim tell us that what he was trying to, they thought that he was going to add to this because they thought he was on the same side as Meraglim. Turns out that he wasn't. And he gets up there and he says very strongly, we can see Alon Aleh Kirashna, so we're going to be able to do that. We will succeed. And the others jump in and say, no, we cannot succeed. It's more powerful than us. And then they were Moitzi Dibah. They really said slander about the land. And they describe that it's a land which is Ocheles, Yoshveh. It eats, it consumes its inhabitants. All the people are of great size there. They saw the Nephilim, the children of giants. They felt like grasshoppers in their own eyes, and so they appeared in the eyes of these people. And at which point, the people respond by crying. They started crying that entire night. And they then complained to Moshe and Aaron. They said, it would have been better to die in Egypt or even in the desert, but not to go there. And someone even suggested going back to Egypt right there. And then Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron prostrate themselves in front of the community. Yehoshua and Kalev, the two good spies, tear their clothes. And they said to the people, the land we toured was good. It was very good. Tovah ha'aretz, ma'oid, ma'oid. It doesn't seem to be helping. This is the end of the Aliyah in terms of summary. Let's take a few points to ponder briefly. There is, first of all, just a very basic question is, where did these giants come from? Were these really giants? The Mepharshim actually say, based on the Gemara, that all the lands in the world were affected by the Mabul, by that great great flood at the times of Noah, except for the land of Israel, the tradition says, which means that in Israel there's a throwback to pre-Mabul days, and in that pre-Mabul time there were giants, so that's where they come from, which is really sort of symbolically is a very beautiful idea of how Israel bridges between the past and the present. Past and the future is where Israel has some elements of the past and some elements of the future at the same time. Now, what was really the mistake of Meraglim? And of course, in a short summary of the Aliyah, we really do not have the possibility of doing justice to this very huge and all-consuming topic. But just a few pointers in the right direction. So for the Malbim points out, and this is the most basic idea, and that is that it was a problem of Emunah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, it's a good land, go to the land. And here they are equivocating and wondering if it is a good land or not. Rav Hirsch says where it came from is that when they came to Hebron, Kalev went to the Kibrei HaAvos, to Maras HaMachpelah, to daven by the Kfarim, but the others saw the giants then started feeling belittled. And in fact, it actually comes down to not just how they were seen, but how they perceived themselves. The way they describe themselves is that we saw ourselves in our own eyes like grasshoppers, and so they saw us, which means to say the problem started with self-perception before actual real perception, and that's where it started. They didn't believe in themselves. In fact, that's because they had this negative view, this negative self-view, therefore everything they saw fell into that rubric. As an example, Rashi brings that the idea is, they said it's a land, Ocheles Yoshvea, it eats its inhabitants. Where did they get that from? What was the kernel of truth based on that was based on? So he explains that the Hashem did them a favor, that when they were there, there were many funerals. And the reason was is to distract the people from noticing newcomers and to be less suspicious of their being spies. But the way they interpreted that kindness that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for them was, this is a land which consumes its inhabitants. Wherever we're going, there are funerals. That's another avenue in terms of perception and self-perception. Another avenue is fascinating. The Zohar HaKadosh says that they were concerned about losing their leadership. Now that sounds very self-centered. What does that really mean? The Shem Yishmuel, the Soccer Chopper Rebbe, explains that their concern was they understood that they were going to be more successful serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a spiritual state in the Midbar, where everything was given to them, where they had no material concerns. They had man, they had the Be'er Miriam, they had the Anunei HaKavod, they had everything that was protecting them. They were concerned that when they went into the land of Israel, now they would need to have an army, they would need to have agriculture, they would need to develop foreign relations. It would be a very complicated reality, and that reality would not be one which would be so successful for them in terms of their spiritual development. They preferred to say, let's stay in the desert. The alternative was not, let's go to another land, let's go to Uganda. It was, let's stay in the desert, in this spiritual bubble, and that would be better for our service. That was really what they were concerned about. But in the end of the day, that's not their decision to make. Now, what is interesting is they had two steps of their presentation. First was their first step of presentation, to which Kalev had to silence the people, and then the Dibar Ra'a, where they really slandered the land. What was wrong with their first presentation? It seems like they were answering Moshe Rabbeinu's question. What was so wrong about this? So the Ramban and the Or HaChaim HaKadosh points out that they used the word Ephes. Ephes means nothing, zero. Essentially, when they said Ephes ki azam, they meant to say is what they were really conveying in their attitude and their tone of voice was, this is not possible, something which is insurmountable. The way the Ha'ai Mekdover points out is that if you look at their words, they said the land which Asher Shlachtanu, the land you sent us to, it wasn't the land you promised to us, it was the land you sent to, almost as if this was the vote at, you know, the World Zionist Congress in the 1890s as to whether to accept the Uganda proposal or not. Meaning to say, is this land good for us, folks? And they say, no, it's not for us. So therefore, that was really what the concern that they were expressing, which in a certain sense display that they didn't accept the very basic assumption that we are going. That was not necessarily a given to them as well. How did it get so bad so fast? I mean, you say, like, how did it turn that you know, people who lived with HaKadosh Baruch Hu under Ne'akoa, the Aaron's going in front of them, suddenly they're doubting all of this? So Rav Hirsch points out that the first misstep was that the Meraglim came back and gave the report to the people. If this was a military report, they owe it to the leaders. You know, like, let's say these are military experts. So they need to go and present it in front of their military higher-ups, and in front of the politicians who make these decisions, the cabinet, the war cabinet, or the defense cabinet. That's who they should have presented it to, certainly Moshe and Aaron. But instead, what do? They went to the people and Moshe and Aaron. And this is really timely for today. This is something which we need to think about today. There's a difference between information and knowledge. Information is a lot of information. How do you mediate? How are you able to take that information and turn it into knowledge? Well, it used to be that there were certain authorities which were in charge of mediation. So there was, you know, government, there was police force, there was experts in the field, doctors, there was, you know, communal leaders, social leaders, who were the mediators of the information to the people. But today there's been so much distrust in basic authority that there are new mediators have arisen, and they're not reliable mediators, people who can just sit on their couch and blog it out or put it on social media and all kinds of misinformation, and they become the mediator between information and knowledge. That's essentially what the Meraglim were doing as well. What they did was they went straight to the people without giving a full and nuanced report about a more complex issue. What they simply did was they went to the people and they gave them raw information with their own interpretation, which allowed the people not to have the fine-tuning of the authority figures who needed to express what this information means. It gave it to the people who, unfortunately, the olam is a golam. Unfortunately, people don't always have the nuanced capacity to be able to read more than three lines without being able to draw an emotional conclusion which is incorrect. And that's what's really happening. This is almost, so to speak, the initial social media of the curse of what we live in today, in terms of people making decisions without real information, without being able to have the knowledge of how to mitigate, how to navigate that information properly. And that's what's happening. That's what the Meraglim did, says Rav Hirsch. They went straight to the people first without reporting to their seniors, to their advisors, before it was given back to the people as to what the situation was. If they really had a military concern, that's fine. They could have come to Moshe and Aaron. Moshe and Aaron would have discussed that and made the presentation to the people based on what they felt was appropriate for the time, and that was what was missed in this point. Very timely, very appropriate for us to be thinking about today in terms of trust of authority and mediating information. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.